session number 27343, reel 1.
Norman Sales, reel 1. Norman, can you tell me where and when you were born, please?
I was born in here in Ellesmere Port.
And when was that?
1920.
What did your father do for a living?
Well, he worked in the corrugated iron thing in Ellesmere Port, Burnells, and he used to put the machine used to put corrugations in, but he'd be on one side and there'd be two on the other side, and he used to then stack them.
And I believe he'd been in the Navy in the First World War.
He had, yes, yeah. He was on the Warrior, HMS Warrior, which is a light cruiser, and that. And they did sink, and he was in the water for a time.
Did he tell you about his naval experiences at all when you were a boy?
Only very little. They never sort of talk about it. Yeah, yeah.
What about your education?
Well, I went from 12 on. I went to the grammar school in Bebington, where you've just been.
And did you have any sort of favourite subjects?
Not particularly. No. The headmaster was all for everybody playing rugby, which he thought was a gentleman's game, but we organised a football team amongst ourselves, much to his disgust. Yeah.
And you touched on there that you played football. Did you have any other interests?
Cricket in the cricket season and football in the other, and that, and did a bit of swimming like everybody else, and that's about it, I think.
Given your later career with the Fleet Air Arm, did you have any interest in aviation?
When I was about 14, what's the name of the old fellow that came in with the biplanes? Sopworth, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we had a big 40-acre field, which is now covered with houses, but it was a bit foggy, and these two biplanes came along, and the girls were walking on the top of the wing and that. And so it was quite interesting. It was about 5 shillings, I think, to have a ride, but I couldn't afford that.
It wasn't Alan Cobham, was it?
Oh, Cobham, yeah, sorry. Yeah, Cobham.
So how did you feel when you first saw these aircraft?
Well, I was very, very interested, yes. But I say it was good watching them and that. But I would like to have had a flight, but we couldn't afford 5 shillings.
When you were at school, was there any plans for what you were going to do when you left?
Not really. I think I went to Shell Research Laboratories, and that's where I started off work. Quite a lot of my friends, not necessarily from the grammar school, but from around the thing, were in the laboratory there, so I went and joined them.
Was the refinery a big employer around here then?
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah. A job for life, not like now.
Prior to the outbreak of the Second World War, did you have a feeling that war might be coming at all?
Yes, I think so. I didn't believe very much about the chance of it being peaceful, like Chamberlain said. But I think I joined the LDV then first, yeah, for a bit, and that. And there was quite an incident where, strangely enough, started off with the Fleet Air Arm plane. The walrus flew over the LDV people, and they fired at it. And he landed at Houghton, the aerodrome that was at Houghton, and sent them a rocket about it. But that was it.
Where were you based with the LDV?
More or less from home and work. And at work.
What kind of duties did you have with them?
Well, I just did a bit of... we learned about the guns and things like that, the Lewis gun and one or two things like that, and their rifle. Yeah. And we did a few bit of patrolling around the area, but nothing very much.
Had you got any memories of actual outbreak of war, listening to Chamberlain's speech?
Not really, not very much, except I used to have to sleep on the ground floor. And I found if I had a couple of pints, I could sleep much better and not worry.
Had you volunteered for the Fleet Air Arm at the early part of the war?
Well, no, when I was 20, that's when they called you up and interviewed you. You couldn't. I could have stayed with Shell because the laboratory was. You didn't have to go to the war. It was a reserved occupation. That's what I'm trying to say, and so flying was the only way you could get away from it, and so that's why I joined that. Well, I also, when I went for my interview, they wanted in the Navy. They wanted me to be a cook or an officer's. Valet or whatever, and I didn't go much on that. And behind him was a poster of the Fleet Air Arm of an aircraft landing on the carrier, and I said, how do you join that? And so he told me, that's how I went into it.
So what was the selection process after that? Were you interviewed specifically for the Fleet Air Arm?
Yes, I had to go down. I had to go down to London and be interviewed. There'd be about a couple of admirals and a couple of captains and things and that. And they asked you various questions about see if you had any idea about what happened if the wind was blowing from here and that. What course would you take? You know, sort of thing. But that was the thing, and they asked me a bit about my work, and asked me again something about the fuel for the aircraft and what the lead did and a few things like that, but they seemed to be satisfied.
And were you called up quite soon after your interview, or did you have to wait?
I went when I was 20, which was June, and then I had to wait until they got a course, the next course that was going to be available. And so I didn't actually join till January the 6th, 1941.
And where did you have to go to?
We went to near Portsmouth. you must have it down somewhere.
Did you go to Leon Solent to start with, or did you go to St Vincent?
I went to St Vincent for the medical and everything, and then I got rather short legs, so I had to go to Leon Solent and be tied into an aircraft to see if my legs were long enough, which luckily it was a petty officer, and he had swiveled my bottom in the seat, and yes, that's all right. So there you are.
Can you give me some idea of how the training started when you first arrived? What types of things they were teaching you in that very initial training?
They taught us RT and with lights as well, and navigation and all naval customs and things like that, yes. I think that was more or less it.
What kind of level did they go to at that stage?
Well, I think we were there for 6 weeks on that, but they bombed us a few times. They put a few holes in our parade ground and blew all the windows out. But they did the naval drill as well. I don't know. The petty officer wasn't too happy about me because we've got these holes in. I took them round it, you know, and he wasn't too happy about that. But I don't know what he thought. I should have gone into them. Anyway, that was that.
How did you get on with the instructors there?
Oh, they were all very good, and especially the fellow in charge. You've probably read, everybody talks about Wilmot.
What was he like as a instructor?
He was very good. He was very, very stern and strict, but you could see he was smiling underneath his general attitude. Yeah, very good.
You said a little bit about this training that you were given. What kind of degree of navigation did you learn in that early part of training?
Well, you learned how to address the wind and a few other things, and the gentleman who was teaching us said, I wouldn't trust you with an ice cream cart in a country lane, he said, with your navigation. So that was the right thing to say to me, because I'm always a bit obstinate, so I worked a lot harder.
And you did a little bit of RT work, did you, there as
yes,
well?
Yes, yeah. Yes, we had to do that. With the Morse code and that, tap it out and that.
Did you have to get proficient to a certain number of words?
Yes, oh yes. There was always a standard in which you had to pass before they would let you go.
And did anybody fail that period, that first instance?
Yeah, oh yes, quite a few. Quite a few did fail that. But they could then transfer to an observer course. Some of them could. Not a lot. There weren't a lot of failures at that stage.
What was the next stage that you moved on to?
Then we went to, we were split up, and half of the course went to Elmsham, which is where I went in Birmingham, and the other half went to Luton. Yeah, I went to Luton, that's right. And they were flying different aircraft than we were. I think they were flying Magisters and we were flying Tiger Moths.
What was Elmdon like as an airfield? Can you describe the airfield to me?
Well, it was a small grass airfield and that. We had a very good place for eating and sleeping and that. The accommodation was very good. We had some very good, nice lady cooks. Very good.
And you started to fly the Tiger Moth. What was the first thing they did? Was it familiarisation with the aircraft?
Yes, you always do that. Yeah, familiarisation. Yeah.
What do you have to do to familiarise yourself with an aircraft?
Well, you just know where all the control were and what they did, what the stick did when you moved it, and things like that, and the throttle, and that was more or less it. Yeah.
And then would you have a flight?
Yeah, they'd take you up and fly, and they'd let you away in the air, they'd let you have a fly and see if you could keep it straight and level and things like that, and see if they were safe. So you did that for quite a bit, a few hours, that we always had the pilot who was training you at that. Then they give you so long before you, and if you didn't go solo within that time, they sort of chucked you out.
Who were your instructors?
Pardon?
Who were the instructors?
Well, they varied. There were some pilot officers and a few sergeant pilots as well.
Were they RAF rather than Fleet Air Arm?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. No Fleet Air Arm ones at that stage. No.
And had they done any operational work and then gone on to training, or were they instructors who'd come from training schools?
That I'm not quite sure about. I think probably there were more instructors and were being brought out and trained, you know, and that. I think so. Because my instructor was a pilot officer, and he used to swear at me, because every time I came into land, he thought I was going to kill them. But he didn't tell me the one thing which, when he gave me to a sergeant pilot, picked it up straight away and said, I know what you're doing wrong, do this. And I had no trouble after that, but the other one used to swear at me.
What were you doing wrong? What hadn't you quite grasped?
Well, I wasn't levelling off. I was coming down like that, you know, in a glide sort of thing, and then but forgetting to level off as you approach the ground. So it was going like that, and I was still going on down, and I would have bounced quite a lot. So, but once I realised that I had to level off with the ground, that there was no trouble.
Did it make it easier going to that other instructor then, rather than the first one who was not explaining to you what was the problem?
Yeah, because he used to swear at me, and I didn't like that. And say he didn't understand why, or he didn't pick up what was needed to tell me. And the sergeant pilot did it straight away.
Do you think the sergeant pilot might have actually been more experienced pilot, maybe, than the other fellow?
Possible. Possibly, yes. I don't know. Each one have their own temperament, don't they? But the sergeant pilot found out what I was doing wrong, and I was very grateful to him for doing that.
Can you give me a little brief description of what the Tiger Moth's like as an aircraft? What its characteristics are, what it looks like?
Well, it's quite difficult to fly, really, because it is very knocked around by the wind and things like that. And to keep it flying straight and level is quite a good effort, you know, and, compared with a lot of the aircraft I flew after that. but they were very good, and they were very safe, no matter what you did. I actually saw one pilot. He got thrown out, but I think he wanted to go. But I was flying. I was out flying, and I saw this aeroplane going into a spin, and it would go around one way, and it would go around that way, and it would keep going backwards and forwards. And he never pulled it out level. It centralized the controls to pull it out, and so it could drive the way. And I followed him down, and I thought he's going to hit it. He was over a forest, and I thought he was going to go in there. But it suddenly came out just above the trees, and I followed him back, and his face was as white as anything. And I spoke to him, and I said, "What the dickens do you think you were doing there?" And he said, "I couldn't get it out of the spin," he said, "and I just let go of the controls, and it came out on its own." So that's how good it was. It was a pretty safe aircraft.
And it would be dual control with an instructor, would it? When you first started it, would it be a dual control aircraft with an instructor?
Oh, yes, two cockpits, yeah.
Where would the instructor sit?
There would always be I'm not quite sure now whether he was in front or behind. I think he'd probably be in front, but I'm not sure on that now. Can't remember.
And did you have good visibility with the Tiger Moth?
Yes, yeah, it's pretty good, yeah.
Now, you mentioned something there about spinning.
Yes.
To people who don't fly, can you explain what spinning is and how you get out of a spin?
Oh, well, spinning is you stall the aircraft and it goes one way round. It flicks over. Most of them flick over one way or the other when they reach the stall. And then they go round in that and round. And then so to you have to put on hard rudder to make it go over and then turn, and then you go down, and as the speed builds up, you push the controls into the centre, and you put hard opposite rudder to the way you got the spin, and then put it central as soon as you're going centrally, and that's how you do it.
So once you'd learnt the principles of flight and spinning, I take it that you soloed. Could you give me a description of that day and how you felt once you'd soloed?
Oh, well, it's very nice not to see. Oh, you must have been in the front, not to see an instructor in front of you, and you're on your own, and you think, "Oh, this is great," you know. That you do a couple of landings, and then you find it's not bad.
So, would he let you then go off on your own and do a circuit?
Yes.
So, can you remember your first circuit? How you felt when you did it?
Well, I say I was quite thrilled to just be going on my own for a change and say, "Well, I've done it." But it's good, and there's probably bounced a little bit with the first one, but it was fairly safe, and the second one was better, so that was all right. And the your instructor stands and watches you from a distance, and he said it was all right, so that was all right.
So what do you go on to after the soloing? Do you do more intense training?
No, you just learn to fly, really, and know what to do and that in circumstances like going into a spin and that. Yeah, but then we got split up then, and half of us went to Canada. You could volunteer to go to Canada, and half of us went to Canada, and the other half stayed over in this country. But I was one who went to Canada, Kingston, in Canada, Ontario.
How did you get there?
We went by the Britannic, which was full of RAF personnel, and about 50 of us Fleet Air Arm ones. And they were supposed to man the guns until we got out to Focke-Wulf range. But they were all seasick. Yeah. And so we got the job, And I was seasick myself, but being in the naval uniform, I had to pretend I wasn't. But so we took over the guns for that period, a couple of days out into the Atlantic, and then we didn't have to do much after that.
Was it going in a convoy or was it unescorted?
We had a beautiful escort. We had the Rodney. We had, four destroyers. Yeah, four destroyers. And I've forgotten now what the others were. But say we were halfway over when Renown. Well, no, which? No, it wasn't either of those. What was the other one? Repulse, Renown.
Oh, was it the Horde? Was it the Horde? Was it
the Hood?
Were you crossing at the time of the Hood?
That's right, 1941. Yes, there was the Hood. And when we looked out, we heard it on the radio. The captain told us that the Hood had been sunk, and that. And we looked out, and we were on our own. The others had all gone off to chase it. Yeah. So we finished off going all the way to Halifax on our own. But we didn't have any trouble.
What about your flying training in Kingston? What were you training on, and what was the pattern of training?
Well, when we first went there, they'd only got old ferry battles because that's what they had. And so we flew ferry battles for a bit. And then we got Harvards, brand new Harvards from America. And so we swapped over from the battles to the Harvards.
What was the ferry battle like to fly?
Oh, big and heavy and that. Quite easy to fly, though, but quite easy to fly. It got up a good speed in a dive. But, it wasn't bad. It was quite a nice aeroplane, really.
Could you spin a ferry battle?
No, I never tried that. I never tried spinning it. And I don't think we were on long enough to do very much on battles because we got the Harvards and that, but we spun the Harvards and that, and they were quite vicious when they spun.
Tell me about the Harvard a little bit more. What type of aircraft was it?
Monoplane, got an American engine, air-cooled engine and that, instead of a liquid-cooled one like the Battle and that. It got a good wide undercarriage, but it had a tendency to ground loop when you landed. If you didn't keep the thing straight and it once started to go off, it would doing so. And the great thing about that was we went to one, the CEO of the people who were training us said, there's no such thing as a ground loop, he said. And he said, you should be more careful. So he hadn't flown one. About 2 days later, he went up and ground-looped it when he landed. So he had a good laugh.
Was it much more sophisticated aircraft than the Tiger?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. It got a lot more controls and everything, yes. Yeah.
And what type of things did you train to do in the Harvard? I take it was more than what you'd done.
Yeah,
with the
Tiger. You're gradually improving in your what you do. So we did formation flying and night flying and cross countries and things like that. Yeah.
What was the formation flying like? What formations would you fly in?
In VICs of three and that, yeah. Yeah, that was quite good. You've got to be quite alert not to get too close. But otherwise, it was all right.
And night flying?
Oh, that was horrific. Except it would be better doing it in Canada than it would have been here because all the streets and things were lit up. In fact, people tried a few times to land on the street thinking it was the runway. But we did have proper flares on the runway. But say the town wasn't very far away and it was so illuminated, you know, so it was difficult. But it had been known that people thought it was the runway until they got close.
How do you fly at night? Because you don't have as many visual references.
Oh, well, yeah, you get link trainers so that you fly blind. We've got this link trainer, and so you have to do that. It's all undercover, and you just watch the instruments, and you have to keep your eye on the instruments and not, because you feel sometimes that you're over here, but if your instrument says you're going straight, you stick to the instruments.
Is it easy to trust those instruments to start
with? Oh, it's easy to trust, but it's difficult to do.
And did you practice air gunnery or bombing at that stage as well with the Harvards?
Yes, we actually did with the battle too. I think we did some attacks, low-level bombing and stuff, yeah, in that. With that, but we did do it with the Harvard in that. But yeah.
At this stage, while you were training in Canada, had you been selected for which area of the Fleet Air Army you were going
to? No, you that was left until you had finished your training there. Once you finished your training there, then they would decide whether you were a bomber pilot or you were a fighter pilot. You see,
had you been assessed continually throughout the course?
Oh yes, always, yeah.
What did that entail?
Right from the word go. Well, you always got a chief flying instructor to take you at the end of your course to take you up and see how you flew and one thing and another. And they did check up on your navigation, say whether you're any good at navigating, and they also said whether your bombing was any good or not.
How were you assessed? Do you remember how you were assessed as a pilot at that stage?
Well, I think I got average in about everything, except perhaps on the navigation side, and they said I was a little bit better than the average on going on cross countries and things.
Did anybody dip from the course during that time you were there?
They certainly did at the way we first started at Elmden. There were quite a few of them that had to drop out. Like the fellow who he's so scared that they put him off, and a few others. Excuse me, I can hear something.
And were there any accidents while you were training in Canada?
Oh yeah, I think so. There were one or two in night flying went into the water. He's right on the side of the lake, Lake Ontario, and I think a couple of them finished up in the water. And that. We lost one pilot at the elementary training too. He flew into the ground practicing forced landings without the engine, without the engine, and you had to go down, but you weren't supposed to go down below 500 feet, and I'm afraid I did that, so I got a red line in my book for doing that.
And what had happened to the pilot? Had he just crashed on a forced landing?
Yes, he crashed. He must have gone into a hedge. I can't remember exactly, but I know he was killed. His name was Holly too, yeah.
Was it important to practice things like forced landings?
Oh, definitely. If your engine packed up, you always tried to get into a field or never turn back into the aerodrome if it packs up on your climb out.
Why was that?
Well, because you they reckon you hadn't really got room to get to turn around and come down, and you didn't want to damage anybody. So you look for a good field.